Services Finance and Policy Committee will come to order.
The House Human Services Policy and Finance Committee will come to order. We do have a quorum, and as we begin, Representative Backer moves approval of the minutes from February 25th, 2025. Are there any additions, changes, or corrections that need to be made to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The motion is approved, and the minutes from February 25th, 2025 are adopted. The first bill up today is Representative Knorr's House File 729. Representative Knorr, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before I begin, I just wanted to address a major issue that we all, some of you who have been following, the proposed cuts on Medicaid. That's a significant challenge for all of us and for the people that we represent. The proposal that was passed by the Republican congressional members that may end up moving forward will definitely cripple our state's budget and the programs that we support and the people who need the service the most. Those who are living in home care or nursing home or those who are being served in a different capacity. Hundreds and thousands of Minnesotans may lose their coverage. And that is not acceptable to our standards. So members, we've got our work cut out for us. We need to advocate that Medicaid should be protected for those most vulnerable individuals, individuals with disabilities, the seniors, and the programs that we have been fighting for to keep people in their homes. So with that, I just wanted to present that. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 729 to be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Representative Knorr. To your bill.
Mr. Chair, I do have an amendment.
Representative Knorr moves the A1 amendment.
The A1 amendment, Mr. Chair, will put the bill in the shape that I want, and also it tightens the grant program.
Okay, are there any questions, technical questions to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to note that the home care program is different than the CFSS, or formerly known as PCA program. What it does, it provides care for individuals in their homes. It definitely saves resources for the state of Minnesota, whereby individuals who are cared in home are not cared in institutional settings. It also provides savings to the state where the individuals who are providing that care for those who need are being served by individuals who are able to do that work within their home settings. Mr. Chair, members, this has been a discussion in several years. But we think it's time for us to address the home care program as a whole. And I just wanted to let my testifier walk through the bill, and I'll answer any questions that you may have.
All right. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. We do also have a testifier, Kathy Messerly, on Zoom, who I believe was going to present or testify first.
Okay.
Chair Schumacher, are you able to hear me okay?
We can hear you. Please introduce yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Very good. Thank you, Chair Schumacher and members of the committee. My name is Kathy Messerly, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Home Care Association. I'd just like to start by saying how grateful I am to have the option of joining you virtually. While I'd much prefer to be there in person with you, I appreciate this option as I recover at home. MHCA's members provide hands-on care to more than 30,000 older Minnesotans and individuals with disabilities in their homes. At MHCA, we are acutely aware of the rapidly growing number of Minnesotans who have had to turn to more extensive, intensive, and currently overly stressed facility-based care if they don't have access to home care services. We know that hospitals and long-term care settings are not the preferred option for most Minnesotans, and our state budget cannot afford to provide that more intensive level of care to all who need it. As Representative Moore just referred to, and as he stated, this bill contains three distinct proposals the legislature can advance to increase access to home health services. First of all, sections 1 through 7 establish a reimbursement rate for a limited annual number of required home care evaluation visits. Three specific kinds of evaluations are required. They're more comprehensive and take 3 to 5 times as long as the typical home care visit, which is how we are reimbursed currently. The three visits are start-of care visits, which is required at the start of any new episode of care to develop the service plan. Secondly, the recertification visits are required every 60 days to ensure everything is going well and make any needed modifications. And lastly, resumption of care. That's required if there's been an interruption in the plan of care, such as a patient getting admitted to a hospital for more than 24 hours. Expecting providers to cover the cost of the mandated evaluation visits adds to the challenge of meeting the needs of people in the community. Section 8 of the bill adjusts the medical assistance reimbursement rate for a specific set of home care services, such that the rates are a bit closer to the cost of providing care. These services include homemaker services under the disability and elderly waivers, home health agency services, which includes the home health aid, rehab therapy, and skilled nursing visit services, as well as the home care nursing services. This change will help providers to address staff wage and benefit challenges. Our providers around the state tell us time and again how the low medical assistance reimbursement rates make it extremely challenging to pay a sufficient wage to recruit and retain the home care staff. With the demographic trend of fewer people in the workforce, we must do all we can to offer strong wages and benefits to the individuals who do step forward to provide critical home care services. And finally, Section 9 of the bill establishes a one-time grant program focused on recruiting new home care staff. With the amendment language adopted into the bill, this grant program is now narrowly focused on compensation to home care nurses who agree to serve as a preceptor for nursing students. A critical part of the solution to our home care workforce shortage is to expose more younger and newer nurses to the home care career option. Better supporting our home care provider organizations to serve as a site for nursing student clinical rotations is a powerful way to do that. In closing, I want to thank the legislature for the significant investments you have made in home care services over the years. They were very appreciated. However, there still remains very real needs for addressing reimbursement rate for home care services and the impact that has on providing the needed care. We know legislators will be faced with a challenging budget situation in the coming years, but we look forward to partnering with you all this year and into the future to advance thoughtful and economically sound approaches aimed at addressing the underfunding of these services. I ask for your support of this bill, and I'm happy to take any questions after our second and final testifier.
Thank you, Ms. Miserly, for your testimony today. Ms. Baker.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is Jen Baker. I'm the administrator with the Good Samaritan Society Home Healthcare located in Robbinsdale. Thank you for the opportunity today to testify in support of this bill. The Good Samaritan Society is a nonprofit organization providing skilled nursing, physical, occupational, and speech therapies, as well as other supportive services such as home health aides and social work. We strive to really improve the human condition at every stage of life through exceptional care, spiritual enrichment, and innovation and discovery. At Good Samaritan, we see every day the impact that home health care can make with the access to home care services on individuals and their families. One example that comes to mind recently was one of our own employees' 94-year-old grandmother. She came to Good Samaritan after suffering a fall and a long, drawn-out hospitalization stay. Following her hospital stay and some rehabilitation within a transitional care unit, her greatest wish was to heal at home in the comfort of her own bed and with her own support of her family. With the support of home care services through Good Samaritan Society, she regained her strength and independence, allowing her to remain safely in the place that she loved the most, which was her own home. I want to highlight this story because during her home health episode of care, she also suffered a urinary tract infection, which oftentimes patients go back to the emergency room in order to seek treatment and care, and can be very debilitating for our elderly seniors. This woman in particular was able to reach out to her home care nurse, to which we were able to intervene quickly and treat the urinary tract infection in her home and avoiding that hospitalization. However, we see every day situations that are unlike this individual due to the underfunding of various home care services and activities that impact Minnesotans who are in dire need of such services. For instance, home care agencies have for years absorbed the high cost of starting and resuming care for a client in the home. So as Kathy had already explained, those in-depth care evaluations, these can take up to 2 hours in the home alone, plus an additional 2 to 3 hours of documentation once back in the office or back at their own home to finish that paperwork. This is done to comply with state and federal standards of care. We're reimbursed for those visits no differently than a routine follow-up visit, which usually takes 1 hour of our time. It's very challenging to make this service work when the money is lost in these in-depth care evaluation visits. The proposal in this bill is to allow for separate care evaluation reimbursement, and that would be extremely helpful in a step forward in addressing the underfunding of this service cost. Additionally, while our organization works to have as robust wages as possible and benefits for our incredibly valuable staff, at the end of the day, we're limited by legislatively set medical assistance reimbursement rates that we receive. The individuals who show up for work day after day in these homes, in these caregiving roles, are truly some of the most valuable workers that we ever see. In the payment rates that we receive, it would be beneficial to better reflect the reality of the care that they truly deliver. In 2024, with the Good Samaritan Society at my location alone, we had what I know to be true is 325 potential referrals for home care services with a form of medical assistance that we could not provide home health services due to either staffing or reimbursement limitations. And those are just the folks that we know about within our agency. Lastly, we've seen a positive impact that comes when we're able to have nursing students come and do clinical rotations in home care services. So as we had talked about with the grant funding, individuals who hadn't considered going into this line of work, they don't get much exposure to it, and they don't know how invaluable and exceptional care we can provide in home care services. In fact, many nursing students are often kind of deterred from going into home care services right after graduating from a program, whether it be nursing or therapy services, just due to the lack of knowledge about the autonomy that it is in home care services. So they're often sidetracked to go different routes, such as hospitals or nursing homes. I believe that this grant would help to improve our workforce within home health care, and it would help to compensate and recognize those who step up to take on these precepting roles. So I ask for your support for this proposal to help more Minnesotans across the state get access to these critical supports that they need to remain living in their own homes. And I just want to say thank you again for allowing me this time to come today and speak on behalf of this bill. And of course, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Baker, for your testimony this morning. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House File 729? No one's making a move, so we'll close public testimony and open it up to member questions. Questions from members. Representative Momani Hiltzley.
Thank you, Chair. So as I was going through the bill, I just have two quick questions. So from your perspective, what matrix or criteria would you use to evaluate the success of the proposed changes?
Ms. Baker, Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll defer to Ms. Baker.
Ms. Baker.
Thank you. I would love to answer that question. I would need to reference some materials unless Kathy Messerly has anything to add to that, but I'd be happy to get back to you on the details of that.
Chair Schumacher and Representative, I could certainly add just a little bit. Part of the success that we would see would be the decrease of Medicaid or medical assistance clients being turned away. As Ms. Baker referred to, we are turning a significant number away. And if we could be reimbursing agencies a bit more, they would be able to take more of the medical assistance clients in. So that would be probably the number one thing that I would point to. We don't have a good way to measure the number of nursing students who are going into home care, but we get anecdotal information from the colleges, and I can tell you that they have been begging for more clinical rotations in home care, and we just haven't been able to provide enough sites for them. I hope that's helpful.
Representative Romani Hiltzley.
Thank you. That was good. Thank you for that. And then I don't know if you wanted to say something.
No, go ahead.
Okay. My second question, Chair, thank you. I am wondering, what are the provisions to address disparities, especially between the service availability between urban and rural areas? Thank you.
Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think addressing the disparities is significant. When it comes to Greater Minnesota, lack of qualified individuals, nurses, medical care providers, is a huge impact on Greater Minnesota. And likewise, I think the grant program may become an incentive to attract, maintain, and retain the workforce that is necessary to provide home care services. It doesn't pay as good as hospitals, so there's more competitive recruitment when it comes to other institutions. So we want to make sure that they get competitive pay, and we can keep those workers in Greater Minnesota. If they're recruited to stay there, they will stay there. Likewise, I think one of the key other advantages to this program is it's going to address the complex transition where people are stuck in the hospitals. And with this program, it provides us an alternative whereby individuals will be said to be cared in their homes. So that's significant for all of us as we know about the hospital transition or the number of people who are now stuck in the hospital just waiting to be discharged.
Representative Omani Hiltzley.
Thank you so much, Chair. I just wanted to thank you for bringing this up because my district has a very large number of group homes, meaning that people are wanting to stay in their homes, and providing quality care for them is really critical. So thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions for the testifiers or the bill author? Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is about Section 9 as well with the grant programs. I have said it in other areas. I think it is really important that we invest in the future professionals that we have. My one question or consideration would be, nothing that I'm reading here identifies that there's a Greater Minnesota lane for this. And so I don't know who would answer the question, but in this grant process, how will we make sure that we've seen these maps that show these areas of lack of support? And when we ask about the resources, it tends to be the professional lane that we need. And so can somebody answer or talk about how we would make sure this grant money is utilized in Greater Minnesota, where we believe or where we're learning has a higher deficit in the professional bench?
Who would like that? Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With the A1 Amendment Section 9, if you look at Subdivision 4, specifically points out the geographical location based on the enrollment and the services that are being provided. So it's going to be based on that geographical distribution. So the grants will be awarded based on that. So if there are less services in Greater Minnesota, that's a different conversational level, but with this one, I think it targets specifically different areas based on the need.
Representative Keeler.
Sounds good. Thank you. The follow-up question to that is then, which colleges and nursing programs are we leaning into to make sure that they're getting their education from Greater Minnesota? That this isn't just answer the first question. What colleges are we partnering with in nursing programs?
Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will defer that to my testifiers because I don't have specific colleges or institutions that have been identified in this bill.
Ms. Baker.
Chair Schumacher, I would be happy to address it.
Ms. Messerly.
Chair Schumacher and Representative Keeler, we have been working with a multitude of colleges. We tend to work with the organizations so that it's statewide. So there's one organization that is for the four-year programs, and there's another organization that's for the two-year programs. So those colleges are around the state of Minnesota. I hope that's helpful.
Representative Keeler.
Yep, that's good. Thank you.
Any other questions, Representative Keeler? Doesn't look like it. Representative Gordon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Knorr, I'm just curious what the cost increase will be when we start, if we were to start covering care evaluations. I mean, is there an estimate on what that added cost would be?
Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the previous estimate indicated it's about $5 million based on the previous bills that we presented, so that may need to be revised. I don't know if I can get help from the nonpartisan staff. Mr. Berg?
Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chair and members, there was, as Representative Knorr mentioned, there was a fiscal note on the first seven sections of the bill in front of you in 2024, which had costs of about $2.3 million in 25 and $5.4 million in 26 and $5 million ongoing. There is a pending fiscal note request now, which for the new bill, those seven sections could be scored, as it were. The last two sections will need some additional. There's a blank rate increase and there's a blank appropriation for the grant program. Those will not be able to be scored until there's some further information.
Representative Gordon.
Thank you, that's all I had.
Any further questions for House File 729? Seeing none, the committee thanks you for your testimony and presentation today, and House File 729 is laid over. Next is House File 728, Representative Hicks. As she makes her way down, Representative Hicks moves that House File 728 is laid over for possible inclusion.
What's coming, Tyler?
And Representative Hicks, whenever you and your team are ready, please proceed.
Thank you so much, Chair and Committee. I'm pleased to present House File 728, which proposes to allow out-of-home respite for children to be offered in an unlicensed setting. Respite is a vital service that supports families throughout the state. Access to reliable respite options is crucial for families needing to take a break from their caregiving responsibility for their complex children. In 2020, a change was made where out-of-home respite for children could be provided, limiting the service to only licensed settings. This change resulted in the loss of trusted options for so many families and, frankly, reduced the service's availability. Today with me is Sarah Grastrom from ARM, and because ARM has really been engaging in these conversations with the department since this change was implemented and has worked together to develop language that would once again allow for this to occur and be provided in an unlicensed setting. I'd also like to turn the committee's attention to the letters that you have in your file folders that are from parents sharing their stories of how impactful losing this has been for them. I will share that for families that are trying to support their very complex children at home, when there is no break, when you cannot find a licensed provider, the consequence is many times that if you get sick, if you go down, there is no one. Can't find a licensed provider, and the solution is your child goes to the hospital. And throughout this state, we have children boarding in hospitals for a variety of reasons. But I believe, and unfortunately it's hard to capture, but from stories from parents like those in your letters, I believe that unlicensed respite with a trusted family member and a trusted friend could save us in those unnecessary boardings and separations of family. Thank you so much for your time, and I will let my testifiers share their perspective.
Thank you, Representative Hicks. Ms. Graston, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Sarah Grafstrom. I'm the Senior Director of State and Federal Policy at ARM. ARM is a trade association of residential service providers providing services through the four disability waivers and supporting people in a variety of different living environments, from a four-person community residential setting to an individual's own home, and through a variety of different services, including 24-hour daily services to unit-based services that may be provided a few hours a week. The bill in front of you today is specific to out-of-home respite for individuals under 18 receiving services through a disability waiver. As Representative Hicks shared, in 2020, a change was implemented by the Department of Human Services that restricted where this type of respite could be provided. Prior to 2020, the service could be provided in a licensed 245D setting or an unlicensed setting as long as the provider had a 245D license and appropriate approval was received from the child's case manager and legal guardian. An example I often use to describe what this might look like is a retired special education teacher who has a strong relationship with a family in her community and provides respite in her personal home 2 weekends a month under their local provider's 245D license. The service itself is licensed, but the teacher's personal home is not licensed. To keep providing the service now, following the change in 2020, the teacher would have to have her home licensed by the Department of Human Services. This change has drastically reduced the amount of available respite, specifically in Greater Minnesota, where finding a licensed setting with an opening for respite can be hard to come by. The loss of respite options has contributed to some families going into crisis and having to seek other options to get support for their child and their family. The bill in front of you will allow for this service to once again be provided in an unlicensed setting when certain qualifiers are met and with certain guardrails included. First, a background study must be completed for everyone who will be present in the home when the respite service is provided. The child's case manager must conduct and document an assessment of the home. The child's guardian or legal representative must visit the home before the child goes to the home for respite. The service must be provided in a residential setting. No more than four children can receive the service at any one time, and every kiddo must have their own bedroom, except if two siblings want to share a bedroom. Services cannot be provided to children and someone over the age of 21 in the same residence at the same time, and an individual can only be in an unlicensed respite setting for 10 consecutive days and no more than 46 calendar days in a year. We know that respite is a critical upstream service that supports families. Without access to reliable and safe respite options, families are turning to alternative placements for their children, including more congregate living settings and even emergency rooms and hospitalization. We're grateful for the department's collaboration on this legislation, and we're hopeful that by passing this bill, families will be able to find options for their children in their own communities that they feel are safe and comfortable. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions, and I'll turn it over to Tyler.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and present your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Tyler Langenfeld. I live in Hastings, Minnesota. I am the Senior Director of 245D Services at ACRA, Minnesota's largest home care provider. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today in support of House File 728. At ACRA, our mission is to improve lives by providing individualized home care services and supports to people in their homes. We accomplish this mission by offering a variety of service options, including out-of-home respite under our 245D license. Specifically, ACRA administers out-of-home respite services for both children and adults in unlicensed settings, essentially in the homes of the individuals we hire to become staff. As you can imagine, families face many challenges when attempting to locate potential out-of-home respite staff. Friends, neighbors, coworkers, family members, these are just few of the places that families look for staff to help them access these critical and well-deserved caregiving breaks. However, as it has been mentioned, in 2020, with the passing of more restrictive language, families who were looking for out-of-home respite for their minor children in an unlicensed setting saw this same list of potential staff shortened to only family members. At the time, ACRA publicly commented that, quote, requiring unlicensed out-of-home respite providers for individuals under the age of 18 to be related to the child dramatically reduces an already shallow pool of potential staff. This new language unnecessarily places an additional obstacle in front of families who are trying to overcome a workforce shortage already identified from the state of Minnesota, unquote. Again, that language was from 2020, and I think we can all agree that 5.5 years later, families are still navigating that same workforce crisis. When this change went into effect, ACRA and other providers were put into a position to call all of the families with minor children accessing out-of-home respite to discover which employees were related and which were not. The staff who happened to be related, they could stay on. But the ones who happened to fall into one of those other categories, like friend or neighbor, their opportunity to continue providing out-of-home respite was over. I remember personally speaking to a longtime staff who called and asked why they were no longer able to provide out-of-home respite to a family they had been working with for over 3 years for no other reason than they are not a relative. All I could say to that person was, I'm sorry, there is a new rule. As you can see, this restriction not only affects families seeking out-of-home respite for their minor children, but also the employment of people who are willing to provide the service. House File 728 will work to remove this additional obstacle for families with minor children looking to access out-of-home respite in an unlicensed setting. Initial and annual assessments, along with background studies for all individuals age 13 or older, is a reasonable and sensible compromise that we believe will continue to help ensure that children are receiving care in safe environments while not assuming that those same safe environments can only be provided by related caregivers. Finally, I would like to add something that I think was missing last time we were going through this debate. Out-of-home respite for minors is in an unlicensed setting is a licensed service. ACRA is licensed to provide this service. The employees who work respite are licensed to provide the service. They complete the same required 245D license training that other staff complete. The services are provided under the oversight and supervision of a designated coordinator, as is required under the 245D license. The only difference is that this licensed service is provided in someone's home and not in a facility with an open bed. And I encourage all of you to ask yourself this question. Isn't that what we want? Must children always receive medical services in a setting that reminds them that they are receiving medical services? This was not an issue prior to 2020, and House File 728 will help us get us closer to where we were, and as a result, ACRA strongly supports House File 728, and thank you again for the opportunity to speak on its behalf.
Thank you, Mr. Langenfeld, for your testimony. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House File 728? Seeing no one making their way up, public testimony is closed. Questions for the bill author or testifier? Representative Curran.
Thank you, Chair. Not so much a question, but I want to thank you, Rep. Hicks, and testifiers for being here today. I've seen how this program benefits families, and it is just, it's so true that that having the licensed facility portion is a true barrier to just having the care that kids need. And what this looks like in reality is, your neighbor, or like you said, a school teacher that maybe was familiar with your kiddo, and just letting, think about after school and the kid goes to the neighbor's house. I mean, do we really want this to be like a facility? It doesn't make sense. It's not homey. And I get that we're sensitive to the safety needs because we're talking about people who are vulnerable. So by no means are we saying that there should be no oversight. And I think this bill really gets to the proper oversight where the family's saying, yep, I trust them. I know these people. I've been in their house. My kid loves to be there. And they don't feel like they're in some sort of institution or hospital. Just like any other kid could go to somebody's house after school, right? So I really appreciate the attention to detail in bringing this back to families. I think this will be a huge help. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Curran. Representative Momani Hiltzley.
Thank you, Chair. And this is not a question, just a comment. I just want to thank you so much for bringing this up because I have a really good friend of mine. She's also in my constituency who's taking care of her child who has cerebral, can't say it with that accent, Yes, thank you. And she's shared the good days and the bad days. And when she gets a moment even to herself, she is able to regroup and provide the care that her child needs. So something like this or any kind of help that we can provide to those families is always a big relief to them. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Is there any other member of the committee who wishes to be recognized? Representative Gordon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm new here, of course, and so one of the questions I would have is why was this change made in 2020? I mean, what were they trying to prevent from happening at that time? Because, I mean, this seems like a common sense idea that you brought forward here. So,
Representative Hicks.
So I was not here in 2020, so I'll let my testifier, one of them, answer. But I was a parent, or I was in the disability space as an advocate in 2020, and we were really mad about it then. So,
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you for that question. This was a result of a waiver amendment that came from the federal government. I think it was technically the 2019 fall waiver amendment. Whenever those come out, all the providers, we all read through them, and I remember distinctly reading this one and going, does this mean what we think it means? Because this kind of felt like it came out of nowhere. So it caused a fury of emails between providers and the agency, DHS, going, why did this change even happen? So I guess the answer is it came from a federal waiver amendment.
Representative Gordon.
Thank you. That's all I had.
Any further questions from members? Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to get a little bit of input from the agency so that we know exactly the challenges that we've had with the this program. I don't know if anyone from DHS is available or.
Director Bailey, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and help us with Representative Knorr's question.
Chair Schumacher, Representative Knorr, unfortunately, I am still digging into that and asking our folks on the history of that, if that's the question that you're asking, or if you have a different question. Apologies.
Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's the question. I just wanted to know that what happened transpired in 2022. Last year, I think we could not get this bill added.
Representative Hicks.
I can actually speak to that because I carried this bill last session as well. And there were some concerns around, you know, what would be the caps, what would be the limits, how would we utilize this service, and really make sure that we have that oversight. And so we've worked diligently with the department since then to really find the right balance of oversight. And I think we've struck it with this bill. Of course, we're continued to have conversation with the department if there are any additional concerns. But I do think we got it right this time, where everyone feels like there's the right oversight. It will meet the requirements in federal waiver requirements and really hit that balance in a way that should be really helpful for families. And one of the things that I didn't mention, but I don't know about all of you, and maybe it's a millennial thing, but having family close by is not always a given for everyone. And people create different families. People have different folks that, you know, I'm an only child, and my children have lots of aunties, but none of those aunties are related to me. They are people who are very important in our lives and have been in our lives for 30 years, but they aren't related to me. And so really making sure that we are encompassing the broader group of family and opening up options for folks is really important. And we think we've struck that balance with this bill.
Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Director Bailey wanted to add something.
Director Bailey.
Chair Schumacher, Representative Knorr, I have a whole team of folks behind the computer. And so, yes, this change was related to the Adam Walsh background studies, and it was really centered around the fact that Children and Family Services required a different background study. I would say we've been working with Representative Hicks for years on this bill, and we don't have concerns at this time. It's in a good place.
Thank you, Representative Knorr.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions for the bill author? Anyone else? Seeing none, final word, Representative Hicks.
Thank you so much, committee, for hearing this bill and for considering it, laying it over and considering it for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Representative Hicks. With that, House File 728 is laid over. And that concludes our business for today. We get to come back tomorrow morning, 8:15, Thursday, December 27th, February 27th. We'll see you then.